Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With MasterClass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With MasterClass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch MasterClass. And 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from MasterClass to their lives. MasterClass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. Masterclass.com/audio.
Find new customers on a platform that's here to stay. With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/tiktokads, and grow your business fast.
Which way is the wind blowing on the future with Shador and the Browns? Let's bring in Mary Kay Cabot. She joins us right now. She's brought to you on the Fan Hotline. Hello, Mary Kay.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well. What's Shador's future here? How open are they to starting Shador Sanders in 2026 as the starting quarterback week one?
They're still very much open to it. They're absolutely open to it. But there are still certain things that have to happen. These last three games have to play out. He has to go out there and demonstrate that he can be the guy. And, of course, we all saw that he had a little bit of a setback against the Bears. So he's got to rebound from that. He's got to make good decisions. The footwork has to be good. The accuracy has to be there. So all of those things have to happen. And then the Browns have to figure out where do they land in the draft. And they also have to know who's coming out in the draft. So it's up to Shador to go out there and prove week by week that he can get the job done. But once they get to the end, they still have more work to do.
How do they scout him? Because my question is, how can he look like he's the guy when he's playing with jobbers?
Well, you have to evaluate for traits. You have to really look at the things that he can do sort of almost in an isolated situation. Is he putting the ball where it needs to go? So when you look at the play to Jerry Jeudy that was snatched out of Jerry Judy's hands, that one goes on the plus side of the ledger for Shador. He would grade out well on that play because he did his job. He put the ball where it needed to go, and it should have been a touchdown pass. So that's how you evaluate that one. When you look at the Titans game, you evaluate that game for the plays that he was able to make. And if somebody dropped the ball or if the ball got picked off, then that still wouldn't necessarily go on the negative side of his ledger. It can go on the positive side. So they're going to have to almost evaluate him in some cases in a bit of a vacuum because he probably isn't going to have the perfect protection that maybe he'll have later on in his career. He might not have the receiving core he would have later on. So some of it is a projection. And, you know, I think that they're getting good data, but now he's got to still go out there in these past three games and show that he can do all of the things that you need to do, including leading the football team. And I think he's really done a good job of showing that.
Well, how do you evaluate him down the stretch? Because this does seem like a really tough spot to get a fair evaluation, given the line, given the wide receiver room, given just all the moving parts. And, you feel bad for him in that regard. And he has been out there making some plays, but overall, statistically, it's been pretty bad.
Well, you just can't evaluate for results and statistics. That you're not going to be able to do. It's the same thing that you sometimes have to do when you're evaluating a college quarterback. Teams had to evaluate Josh Allen when he didn't necessarily have the best supporting cast and the best situation when he was in college. You had to evaluate him for traits, and that's what the Browns are going to have to do with Shedeur Sanders. You just have to look at the arm strength, the accuracy. We know some of the things that he does really, really well already, and you have to project those things. You can't say, oh, look at the rating. Look at the completion percentage. Now, you can look at the completion percentage if you're looking out there and he's missing throws and he's missing where to go to with the ball and he's not placing it accurately, because he didn't place it accurately. He was inconsistent in Chicago with ball placement, even when he had the time to throw. So you're really going to have to look at those things again, almost in a vacuum, or isolate those things on him and try to project how that will look when you have an upgraded offensive line and receiving core.
Mary Kay Cabot, oh, were you going to say something to him? Oh, Mary Kay Cabot joining us on the Fan Hotline. With Quinshon Judkins, I woke up. There's a couple of different folks starting to get a little bit, maybe it's more on Quinshon. You know how I feel about the offensive line changes. I think it's going to be very hard. I like what I've seen out of him. Maybe I'm seeing it through brown and colored, orange and brown colored glasses. How good or how bad has Quinshon Judkins been?
Well, I think he has already established that he's a really good runner in the right conditions, but the Browns have been falling behind. It's hard to maintain and sustain the run when you are not ahead in the game and you have to go more to the pass, which is kind of what happened in the Bears game. And, they're facing stacked boxes all the time. So he's another one where you have to really try to figure out what is this going to look like when you have a better offensive line and when you have a better passing attack where you can actually run the football and you're not running against 8 and 9 stacked boxes like that. So I think it's been a little bit tough for him. It's hard to get into a rhythm. It's hard to get into a flow when you're not converting third downs, when you're not passing the ball, when you've got the stacked box. So I think it's been tough sledding for him.
All right, Mary Kay, you can debunk this if you'd like, because this is a feels thing. I don't have any numbers to back it up. I don't have any nifty charts to produce or go online with, but it seems to me their operations have gotten muddier, messier, worse since Tommy took over play calling and he went, he's been upstairs. That's just to my naked eye. It seems like there's been more issues getting stuff in, players running on or off the field offensively, delay of games. I think that's all gotten worse. Does that match what you've been seeing?
Well, the operation does need to be cleaned up, and that's going to be a key over these last 3 weeks. They do have to be operationally sound and clean, and I think part of it is, a large part of it is the fact that they've had such a revolving door on the offensive line. They had their 9th starting offensive line combo against the Bears, and then, of course, they lost Tevin Jenkins to that in that game, and then they were down to their 3rd option at guard there. So I think that hasn't helped matters at all, because some of the guys you'll bring in as eligibles, they're actually playing and starting and things like that. So there has been confusion because of all of the upheaval and all of the injuries on the offensive line. But once again, it's really no excuse. You just have to work a little bit harder. Everyone has to study a little bit more, and you have to try the best you possibly can to run a clean game over these next 3 games, or that's when you start to take a look at the coaching staff and wonder how this thing is going.
All right, so these are bigger picture questions I have here. I know Shador is a very big question, but I got to go with the guys who are the coaches here. Going with Tommy Rees here, just to piggyback off of what Anthony said, Mary Kay Cabot joining us here on the show. If they were to make a move at head coach, would Tommy Rees be seriously considered for the position?
Well, you know, I've wondered about that myself because Tommy is so well thought of inside the building. He's so well thought of outside the building in the college ranks and in the pro ranks. And he's already gotten some bites and, you know, some interviews, and people are very, very interested in Tommy. And I know the Browns want to make every effort to keep him around. Having said that, I don't know if they believe he's ready to be a head coach yet. So we'll have to see how all of that shakes out. I really don't know where they're going with that yet, but I do think that they will make every effort to try to keep him around.
All right. Between Kevin and Andrew Berry, what's the most likely possibility? Kevin goes, Andrew stays. Berry goes, Kevin stays. Both go, both stay.
Well, first of all, I'm on record as saying that I do think that Kevin deserves a chance to coach this football team when he has a quarterback that he can win consistently with. And I don't know that he's really had that yet here for any length of time. So I do think that if he went somewhere else and had a quarterback that he can work with and win with, then I think he's going to be successful. And I think he would be that here too. So if I were making the decision, I would try to give him the quarterback and see what he can do with it. So I just want to make sure that I'm on record as stating that that's how I feel about that. And then as far as Andrew is concerned, I certainly don't see how you, you know, pack up your NFL defensive rookie of the year, get him ready to head out to the awards ceremony. And, you know, and then you've got all these other really great rookies that you have just drafted in one of the best rookie classes that I've ever seen here, and say, oh no, you're done. You know, sorry, Andrew, that's just not, you know, this is not going to fly. I remember at the owners meetings, Jimmy Haslam said, this is a very important draft and he basically has to nail it. And I think he's nailed it. I think he has nailed this draft. And I think we can pretty much all agree on that. And he hasn't even necessarily made one of the most important pieces of that draft. And that was the first rounder that will come in 2026. So I just don't see that Andrew is going anywhere based on what we've seen from this draft class so far. I think it's the foundation, and I know how you guys feel about this. I think this year is the foundation, and I will say it again, of Super Bowl window two. And I think that next year will be the second layer of that. And I think that Andrew will be the one making those decisions.
I would disagree with you a little bit on the draft class. I think it's a really solid draft class. I've been so excited about Carson Schwesinger. That guy looks like he's going to play for a decade. Judkins showed all sorts of signs early. I know people are starting to say they took the wrong Ohio State running back. I don't know. I think he just needs to be behind, you know, a better line, better situation over time. But there also weren't priority positions. And the priority positions, the quarterbacks, I think he kneecapped both of them by taking one in the third and one in the fifth and causing that disastrous two-way weird quarterback competition to start the year. And that's all part of managing a roster. So I don't totally put this draft as this runaway success story, because I think he also hurt himself with some of the layout on how they took the quarterbacks. And I wonder how Jimmy feels about that, because it's been just a weird, weird year. And second straight year, they've been one of the worst teams in football. And next year, there again, Vegas is going to consider them going into the season as one of the worst teams in football.
Well, they have one of the best defenses in football. So we can look at the defense and say that they have that. What they didn't have this year was the quarterback. And they knew heading into it that this was a fact-finding mission, that they were trying to identify a quarterback. And in their minds, there really wasn't a quarterback at the top of the draft that at least that they could get their hands on. And so they did the best thing they felt they could do. I do agree that I think that there should have been some way to field a winning quarterback this season, that you should have been able to put somebody out there that could win more than one football game for you. And I don't know who that would have been or where that would have come from, but it would have changed everything. I think they could have contended this year had they had that guy. So I do agree that the quarterback situation didn't go the way anybody thought it would or should or could have. So I do agree with you there, but I do think that this team is still right now, as we speak, a good quarterback away from contending. And I do think that it would be premature to pull the plug on this particular roster, when that hole is the one that needs to be filled.
Mary Kay Cabot with us on the show. Miles chasing history. There have been some fans who have gotten our mentions and even called in a couple times this week. They're mad because Miles is lined up in the wide nine, which I've the number's grown where I've said he's lined up in the wide 47 and things like that. They're frustrated because he's sack chasing, he's record chasing. It is a minority, I will tell you that. But I have to ask the question, is there anybody within the organization, in the locker room at all, that is frustrated that he may be going after the record?
No, I don't find that to be the case at all. To a man, every single person that we talk to is on board with trying to help him get the record, to the point where I think Alex Wright willingly gave up a half a sack 2 weeks ago. These guys are all in on Miles getting this record. They know what he means to this team. They're all happy to be breathing the same air as arguably one of the best defenders of all time. And I don't get the sense that anybody is having a problem with that. We talk to the coaches, we talk to the players, and they really, really want this for Miles. And I think he probably will get it on Sunday.
Oh, he'll get, because I was going to say, how important is it that he gets it in the next two games?
It's important. I think it's important because I think that getting it at home is going to be a whole lot more meaningful than getting it on the road. I'm sure they've got a video queued up and a celebration all queued up, and he'll be there on the lakefront in front of the hometown fans. And I think he really was on a mission this year, not just to try to take this team to the Super Bowl or to the playoffs, but to also in some ways atone for everything that happened in the offseason and win back some of the fans that may have jumped ship.
Mary Kay Cabot, find her on Twitter at Mary Kay Cabot. We thank you so much for the time. All the very best to you. And next Thursday is Christmas, so have a happy Christmas, Mary Kay. Merry Christmas.
You too. Merry Christmas, guys.
Thank you. Mary Kay Cabot on the Fan Hotline.
When you think about meal kit companies, what do you see? Probably long, complicated recipes and subscriptions you can't escape. But with the new Blue Apron, we're doing meal delivery differently. No subscription needed. Faster, easier meals. And the same dedication to quality we've always had. Shop 100-plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Great to have our guy Albert on. I think we mended the fences. I think people expected me last week to go after Albert more, but Albert started the interview by laying down and being like, you know what? You can't go after somebody when they're laying down.
Yeah, it went exactly the way it was supposed to, especially somebody that does this a courtesy of coming on every week for a million years and 15 minutes at a time.
Now, that being, speaking of somebody that's been coming on the show.
I say that, and we'll go after Fanta any day.
Yeah, I mean, he's Cleveland's own NBC Sports.
That's right. He's built tougher than Albert.
He is. I mean, he's Cleveland tough.
That's right.
And he also lives in, I think, New Jersey. So you got to be tough there, too. It's a Garden State. A lot of gardeners out there to go ahead and talk as we do. It's been a silly show as we do every single Tuesday at 4:20 NBC Sports, Cleveland's own, the great John Fanta with us now on the Fan Hotline. Can you confirm the Garden State has a lot of gardeners in it?
And we don't mean sauce gardener.
The Garden State has a lot of gardeners in it. The Garden State is an underrated state. The Garden State does not get enough credit. Well, it doesn't want the credit, but like, I always laugh because when I came out here, it's like New York Giants, New York Jets. So, you know, 17-year-old me was like, okay, they must play in New York. And they very much do not play in New York. They play in New Jersey. So that's always interesting to me. It's good to be with you guys. Happy holidays. Happy Tuesday.
Happy holidays.
Happy Tuesday to you as well. I will say
Zach
this.
Zach Braff, by the way, Garden State, that movie, good movie.
I'm not going to do
I've
it.
Never
you
seen
don't like that movie?
Movie?
It's fine. His movies are fine.
Yeah.
He plays a neurotic character. Yeah. It's a real stretch for him.
There's layers.
There's layers.
That's my response to every movie. There's layers.
You guys are special.
Thank you. Here's what I'll say about New Jersey. If you get out of the place that's right across from New York, like the actual garden part of it, it is really lovely and lush.
Do you pump your own gas? Isn't that the thing in Jersey? You don't pump your own gas?
They pump, yeah. So
that still exists,
they
right?
They pump it for you. Yeah, you don't get out of the car.
Do you tip that guy?
You can stay toasty. Yes, especially this time of year.
What do you tip? Is it like off a $40 fill-up? What do you tip?
Yeah, a $5 bill.
The math here. That's about 25%.
I don't know. I would think like just even a couple bucks seems pretty good.
12.5%, I believe.
Now, do they always talk about that? Are they like, do people like the convenience of it, or do they hate that it seems like an added cost thing because you have to tip?
No, they like but a lot of people just don't tip. There's still a lot of people who just do not tip. Well, that's the reality of the situation, guys.
Now that's the Garden State has really lost some luster for me.
Yeah. Pete, they don't let you. I mean, you get out of your car and you start to pump, it's a crime. It's not legal.
It's a real crime. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah.
Murder's pretty okay.
It is.
Mafia, let go. You get out to try to pump your own gas. We got another thing coming.
Hey, Guido, another one.
What are you trying to do? He went for the unleaded again.
Who pumps 89 by themselves?
Have some Senka.
It is wacky.
Oh, all right, buddy.
It's very wacky.
I promise you, this is not where we were going to go to start. It's been one of those days. Are you giving Shador a pass for how he played on Sunday?
Yeah, I give him a pass for how Sunday went because this football team is checking out. And, you know, you look at the opponent on Sunday, and it did make me think. I don't know why I thought of this, but I did think a little bit of the Browns 2 years ago when they were on their pursuit for a playoff spot. And when you're in pursuit of a playoff spot and you know the assignment and you know your identity and you know your DNA, I remember the broadcasters came on the air. And Kevin Kugler, who's one of he's a good friend of mine. He's always very nice to me when we were at Fox together. And Kevin teed up Darryl Johnson and said, you know, do you think that this is a lot of Bears fans are worried about this being a look ahead spot or this being a letdown spot. And Darryl Johnson's like, well, that's not how the Bears are thinking now. And this new coach has injected just a different mentality. And then you felt that mentality on the field. The Browns weren't prepared. They weren't ready to play the game. They're poorly coached. They're poorly managed. And now some of the players, whether they want to admit it or not, are thinking about Cabo. They're thinking about the beach. And you're certainly not thinking about winning a game in -5-degree weather against a team that's bound for the playoffs. So it's a lesson for Shador. There's plenty of tape to watch. There's plenty of things that he can continue to get better at. But like, I know what I watched the week prior. And is there a difference in competition? Is there a difference in team? Yeah. But, like, remember, he's a fifth-round pick, and it's a week-to-week thing. And I don't know if he's the for-sure answer heading into next year. I don't think anybody – if you're saying that he is, I think that's premature too. It's a week-to-week thing. We got to see how he does the remainder of the season. Obviously, the competition's challenging in different ways. You know, there's a gettable opportunity against the Bengals there, and who knows what that game's going to mean. But, like, I don't look at that and say, all right, downright failure, definitive, he's not the answer, this, that, or the third. That Bears team, they've won the amount of games that they've won for a reason. The Browns are a team with a lame duck coach and a team that needs to reset.
Yeah, I mean, John, you had clock penalties out of kickoffs. You had multiple penalties. Harold Fannin had two penalties on the same play before the play even got snapped off. Like, there was the wristband situation. Like, this was, I thought it was a clinic on how not to coach a game top to bottom.
It's embarrassing. The end is near. We haven't had a Black Monday in 6 years, and it's going to happen. It's inevitable now. And, you know, I think Shedeur Sanders, nobody's saying that he's perfect. To the people that are now burying him, when he was starting at first, fellas, you talk with Albert, we talk every week, you talk with a lot of people. But one of the things that we discussed was, I said, I've got to be fair in my evaluation of Shedeur, like I was with Dylan Gabriel, and consider the pieces around these guys. The talent that's on this team on offense is young and inexperienced. You put them at Soldier Field in that cauldron of Chicago, and it's just going to – they were not playing the same sport as the Bears, and it showed. And that goes beyond Shedeur. Now, Shedeur Sanders is still the reason why the Browns had a chance to win the prior week. The coaching held them back. Now you're playing a team that's playing a different ball game than you are, and everything gets amplified. Everything. All of it. So to me, Sunday was a product of a lot of things. Sanders obviously had a bad game. Sanders has to work on things. The Browns should not be hitching their wagon, you know, even if Shedeur Sanders plays well the remainder of the season. They should not be hitching their wagon saying it's Shedeur or nobody heading into next year. They should, in my mind, have another quarterback option. I think a veteran quarterback, not named Deshaun Watson, that goes into training camp and has an honest, what's supposed to be a professional competition, with knowing that Sanders hopefully has a good start, finish to the season. But, like, I can't sit here and say that I like watching this team for the young talent, but I'm not going to sit here and say that, like, I'm going to make my conclusion or some referendum on every single throw or every single play. There's been some good. Sunday was a lot of bad, but that's why he's starting the remainder of the season. He's a fifth round pick, and they're giving him this opportunity. He's got a season, and he can't have a follow-up. He can't have follow-up performances to what was last Sunday, but there are things that are beyond his control, which is why I go to, you can't make a definitive claim on his future because there's a lot of flaws within the Browns.
John, has Team Fantas started accruing a list of potential head coaching candidates?
I don't know if I've gotten there necessarily yet. I am intrigued by a couple of the coordinator options out west. It's at Seattle and Los Angeles with the Rams, you know, and even the Chargers to that matter. I'm not in the Gruden camp because I just don't think that he's the answer for the Browns right now. I want to try. Look, they don't grow on trees, but I just look at what Detroit, you know, I look at what Chicago, I look at what the Jaguars have done. And sometimes the choice is not necessarily the obvious one. They've got to get somebody who's going to provide a new fire, a new energy that gets the fan base, that gets what they're dealing with. You know, this is not the most desired job in the NFL. In fact, at the moment, it's probably in the back half of desired jobs because of the level of dysfunction within. But I always laugh when people say, well, you know, then who are they honestly going to get? There's only 32 of these, and it's still an NFL head coaching job, and the Browns do have young and feisty talent. I would say I want to go into the process with an open mind. I don't think that candidate is quite obvious. I think they've got to look hard at their identity. I'd like to keep Jim Schwartz in some capacity. I know that that might not be possible, but he's just done such a good job, and he's formed what you wish you had on offense. But I know that that can be harder because a new coach is going to want his people, and you know, who knows what Jim Schwartz wants to do. But I wouldn't say that I sit here and I'm like, you know, I got to have this guy, but I'm intrigued by the Seattle staff and the Rams staff and some of those coordinators that are there that could be options for the Browns.
Do you think then, you mentioned Jim Schwartz, do you think that the Browns are definitely going offense for head coach with the idea that you'd keep Jim Schwartz in place defensively?
I think that that would be their preference, JP. And I'm not saying that, you know, that I'm getting that from anywhere, but why would that not be? How would that not be? Jim Schwartz has engineered a defense that if they had any offense, they're already one of the best in the league. And if you said that the Browns had the best defense in the league, I mean, there's a lot of numbers that would suggest they do. And look at how awful the offense is week in and week out. Like, Jim Schwartz deserves credit, and he gets none nationally because his team stinks, because their offense is devoid of scheme, devoid of organization, devoid of rhythm. There's nothing to like about it as a unit. And it doesn't matter who's playing quarterback. There's no quarterback in the league that would make this offense look good week in and week out. It's just not possible, nor alone against the competition they were playing on Sunday. So I would try to keep Jim Schwartz. Jim Schwartz shouldn't be fired. He shouldn't. Now, if the new head coach comes in and says, I don't want Jim Schwartz, I want my guy, well, guess what? You're paying him a lot of money. He's got to churn out results. And if he had a two-year stretch like Kevin Stefanski's just had, Jimmy Haslam would probably fire him because Paul DePodesta isn't helicoptering around anymore. So that's up to the head coach. But if I'm the Browns, I try to keep Jim Schwartz. Jim Schwartz is a top five defensive coordinator in the league. Wouldn't you guys agree?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
John?
So, you know, to me, one thing I want to bring up on this call this week is I can't help but look at the Jacksonville Jaguars result every single week and think about the fact that the Browns traded their pick to Jacksonville or traded for Jacksonville's pick in this upcoming draft. And look at that trade. Yet another stain on Andrew Berry, because the Jaguars are good. They're really good. And I think you made that trade thinking you'd have another top five or top 10 pick, and they're not going to have that. That's another mistake made by the front office.
John Alaskid, do you expect the next three games to look identical to what happened in Chicago?
Well, no. Man, if it's that bad, I don't think it'll be that bad. I think that you're going to see this team. I will bet right now, and we'll come back on Tuesday, that they're going to be close and have an opportunity to win one of these games. The last one probably presents the best opportunity to do so. Not probably, it does. I think they're a different team at home, guys. Buffalo has also had a little bit of a theme where sometimes they sleepwalk, and they've been susceptible to giving up runs. That's one thing with Buffalo is they can give up, gain on the ground. They can. But Sunday was a mitigated disaster against a team that's riding a wave, against a team that has to win. And the Browns have a couple more of those games. The Bills and Steelers are both really good. I just think that I think the Browns are different in their home confines, that you're going to see certain guys just play better, and you're going to see things be better when you're not in that Soldier Field crowd in Chicago. That was just deer in headlights for the Browns. I don't think they will look as bad as they were this past Sunday. I think they're going to have a shot to win one of these games. I do.
If the Bengals and the Browns swap coaches, who wins that outcome?
Oh, wow. Wow. Man, that's a good question. The Browns, because I just don't think. It's a good question. The reason why I say the Browns is because I'm just watching this coach week in and week out, and I don't know if, I mean, I'm sure he and his agent have had to have the discussion of an exit plan here or whatever it looks like, and you know, there's a reason why. you don't just make Schwartz the interim. I mean, clearly the Browns are trying to see if they could have some value with their head coach. Because it's just, I would pick the Browns in that one because I'm just so, the Bengals stink. And this year, Kevin Stefanski's been brutal. And look, I previously defended him. But I have to look at what my eyes see, and I don't think Zach Taylor's a really good coach, but I just think I don't know what Stefanski's adding at all to the Browns anymore. He has lost them multiple games this season by being conservative or by doing things that make you just say, what's going on, or by not adapting at all within the game. So if the Bengals and Browns played, like I look at Stefanski's offensive scheme. I know Joe Burrow's taking the snaps, and you. But you asked me head coaches if they traded.
Mm-hmm.
I'd still say Taylor would have more to offer right now. To me, I just think that that Stefanski's message has fallen on deaf ears in Cleveland, in Berea, at this point. Like I just don't think that it resonates anymore. Whereas I just think any other voice would be better right now. And it's not even because I hate Kevin. I don't. Kevin Stefanski did some good for the Browns in his tenure. He did. But he no longer is doing that. The last 2 years have been fireable.
John, we appreciate you, buddy. Happy holidays. As always, we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, 3-Win Wilson. You're right on target.
Feels good to be right, buddy boy. John Fanta there, who owes me a burger. I haven't forgotten. Great stuff with John, NBC Sports. We'll react to what he had to say in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. Let's make ourselves smarter, shall we? We're going to make you smarter in a number of ways. One, we're going to talk football with Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk here in a second. Two, he's going to talk about all the books that you can read that he's written that will make you smarter, especially one for an ebook coming up here soon. Mike, happy holidays to you. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
Hello, Mike.
Guys, how are you? Good to talk to you. Happy holidays.
All right, my friend. I need to go buy a book. I was thinking about getting Big Shield for my son. Let him go read that. So there's one. How am I doing that? And then what? You got anything else cooking?
Well, how old's your son? There's some words in there that he may not already know.
He knows him.
Right. Kids got to learn sometime, as James would say. Big Shields at Amazon. You can get the print for $14.99. You can get the ebook for 99 cents. And that is the book that tells the tale of gambling, the mob, and professional sports, not just football, fictional league that is officially not the NFL, but there's some basketball, there's some baseball. And it's a lot of the stuff that I can't say it was ripped from the headlines because it predates the headlines. Oh, so I saw the potential for what was coming, and I got the book out there before it arrived. And I think there's a lot more stuff that can happen that could hurt the integrity of the NFL and other sports. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote it.
Gotcha. All right. So Dan told me you got a sweet deal coming up for some folks too. They want to hop online. True.
Yeah, I got a Christmas book that has been out for a couple of years now. And in the past, I've sold it and I've given the money to charity. This year, I've decided to make it free on several days throughout the holiday season, 5 days in all. Day number four is Thursday of this week, the 18th, on our way home. You can find it on Amazon, and you'll see on the 18th that it is free for the ebook, not the print edition. The print edition is a mere $9.99. That remains the same price, and it's a great stocking stuffer, and it just about would fit in a stocking. You got to curve it a little bit.
Perfect.
But you don't have to make any space for the ebook. You can get it free on Thursday, and I think the fifth day is next Monday, the 22nd. So making it free this year, and that's the one of all the ones I've written so far. That one's my favorite, and I've gotten a lot of great feedback about it. It has a very positive message. It was completely unintended. But it's in there, and it's a good thing. It's a good thing to get you in the spirit, and I think it also can help you if you've got some relationships in your life that have been broken, and you're looking for a way to try to fix it. You're looking for a little inspiration to make the first move, or if you want to forgive yourself for failing to reconcile with someone before they passed on. I think that this will help encourage you to find forgiveness for yourself, and I think. You know, as hard as it is for us at times to forgive others, I think we have a lot of trouble at times forgiving ourselves and putting down that bag of regret and moving on with our lives.
Wow, it sounds like my relationship with my dad over the Browns. Now maybe at one point I'll forgive.
Blaming your dad?
Yeah, I might as well. Nice. I mean, I got to let it go for my relationship with the Browns because he gave it to me. No, rest his soul. All right, what's going on with the Browns, my friend? Because we look here and we're trying to figure out if, you know, Deshaun Watson's in a 21-day window. Is Kevin Stefanski also in a 21-day window towards the end of the season?
Well, we don't know because we never know what ownership is going to do. And what Jimmy Haslam has created, I believe, this is my opinion based upon all the things I've observed over the years, not just with the Browns, but with the NFL's other teams. I think Jimmy Haslam has created a scenario where he can meddle as much as he wants to meddle and trust that none of his lieutenants will out him as being a meddler. And, you know, there's a certain respect I have for Jerry Jones being the GM of the Cowboys in title, in name. He's out there taking the heat. He takes the criticism because he's making the moves. I've long believed that Jimmy Haslam is the guy behind the scenes who's got a ladle deep in the stew but doesn't want the fans to notice it because he doesn't want to have the criticism for all the things they've done that haven't panned out. So I say that because if you're going to blow it up, you better bring in people who can be trusted to, number one, let you meddle, and number two, take the heat for the outcome of your bad decisions. And look, Jimmy Haslam can say, well, I never told them to do this. I never told them to do that. You don't have to be that direct when you're the multi-billionaire owner of an NFL team. Anything you say, any question you ask, a facial expression, that sends messages that the people who are working for you are going to act on. So I think he's been too close to the action. I think he's been too involved in the decisions, and I think he wants to keep it that way. And if you usher out Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski, who have done a good job of dealing with it, you're risking bringing in people who won't be quite so charitable.
If you're the Haslams, do you think that you should bring back these two guys? Or, and there's so many different areas to talk about this, Mike, are they a package deal or are they not? And do you actually survive three wins followed by whatever this is going to be this year?
Generally speaking, I'm a firm believer in coach and GM being fused at the hip. I think a scenario where one guy could stay and one guy could go creates dysfunction, because when things go sideways, it doesn't become an issue of what can we do to make things better. It becomes what can I do to blame the other guy. subtly, discreetly, but inevitably. And that's one of the complaints coaches have, because they're down on the sideline working the game and they look up at the suite and they see the GM sitting next to the owner and they think, I wonder what they're talking about. I wonder what they're saying about me. I wonder what the GM is doing to blame me for the current state of the team. So I'm a big believer in both go or both stay. They survive together, they thrive together, or they fail together. It all comes down to whether or not the Haslams feel like they have to make a change. You know, every team will act like the goal is to win the Super Bowl, even the Browns. At some level, oh, we're trying to win the Super Bowl. You want to keep the fans engaged. You want to keep them paying for tickets, showing up, buying all the overpriced stuff that they sell at the stadium, watching the games on TV. And there's a basic minimum you have to do to keep the fans engaged, because most of the fans are stuck with their fandom. What are they going to do? What are they going to do? They're going to deprive themselves something they love, even if it drives them crazy. They're going to go find another team. That doesn't work. It's like a family member. It's hard to disown a family member. So there's a basic minimum, and I think the bar is low as to what the fans will tolerate. Well, the bar is high as it relates to what the fans will put up with before they demand change. And I think that's the big factor here. Can the Haslams continue to fill the stadium with enough people to make the organization profitable? And do they feel compelled to make the change? Factoring in what I already said about Jimmy Haslam, I believe, wanting to be able to meddle with the team and have people there in those jobs who will let him do it and keep their mouths shut and not leak to anyone. Hey, you know, I wanted to do this. I wanted nothing to do with Deshaun Watson. Surely there's at least one person in the organization in the decision-making process that wanted nothing to do with the Deshaun Watson trade, and no one has broken ranks to say that. That is impressive that Jimmy Haslam has fostered that kind of loyalty, that none of the people who could have said, it wasn't me, hey, I just want you all to know, it wasn't me, that's never happened. I mean, for the worst transaction we've ever seen in the NFL, and I'm not exaggerating, no Andrew Berry, no Kevin Stefanski, no Paul DePodesta, no leaks saying, it wasn't me. They're all taking the heat together on this one.
Sorry, is that enough to keep both of those jobs for next year?
It could be.
Wow.
It could be again. Hey, look, it all comes down to what you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. Are you trying to make money, or are you trying to win championships? Are you trying to make your fans think you're trying to win championships so you can make money? It would be ludicrous for a rational human being to pin his or her feelings of success on the question of whether or not they win the Super Bowl, hoist the trophy, and have a parade. Because you're not going to do it. The odds are against you every year. The odds are against every team. The team that wins the Super Bowl has defied 1 in 32 odds, in theory. That assumes all teams are equally constituted and equally equipped, and we know that's not the case. But still, that can't be how you define success. You know how you define success? Look at the balance sheet. That's success. Look at all the other stuff you can buy with the money that you make from the football team. Look at how many of these owners have these aircraft carriers that are floating hotels, right? That comes directly from – that's when you have so much money you don't know what to do with your money, so you want to show off to the world how much money you have, and you buy this giant boat that you don't need. So that's the game. That's the game. How much money do we make? They're all winning – they're all winning their own personal financial Super Bowl every year, and it's all part of this grift of a competition for one team to reign above all others. They're all reigning because it's raining for all of them.
What have you thought of Shedeur Sanders as a possible quarterback starter in this league moving forward?
Well, I mean, we've seen some good, we've seen some not good. And how much of it's on him? How much of it is on the lack of a supporting cast to really give him the help he's looking for? He's looked functional. He's passed the eyeball test for the most part. He's had some good plays. You know, Bill Walsh always said, if I see a guy do something once, I can coach him to do it all the time. Mm-hmm. And he's done enough things that you look at and say, all right, we got something we can work with here. So the question is, after the season, what are the options? How do they proceed? The options are Shedeur Sanders, Deshaun Watson, in theory, sign somebody in free agency, trade for somebody, or use one of the first-round picks on a quarterback. And I know there's been this belief that that's what they're going to do, but, man, if you could find a quarterback elsewhere, you don't have to scratch off that lottery ticket and hope. Number one, you don't have to invest the lottery ticket in the quarterback, and then you don't have to scratch it off and hope it's a winner. And we know what history tells us. It's a crapshoot. And the Browns' history tells us it's a crapshoot. From Brandon Weeden to Johnny Manziel to Tim Couch to whoever else they spent a first-round pick on that hasn't really panned out at quarterback position. If you can find a serviceable quarterback elsewhere and maybe start looking for the next Myles Garrett with your two first-round picks, you're better off. So that's going to be job number one. Once they decide what changes, if any, are going to be made to the power structure, the next question is, what the hell are we doing at quarterback? And I think Shadur has done enough to be part of the conversation. We'll see what they decide to do.
When you look at Shadur Sanders right now, and this is this is one of the themes that goes through my head. A lot of people here, or a lot of fans here, think Shadur can be a franchise quarterback for the Browns, which would put them in the position that you just talked about. And as I watch him play, I think he's exciting and I think he's fun to watch. But in the back of my mind, I keep thinking they walked up to that microphone 143 times and no one said his name during the draft of last year. Do you think anyone across the league is feeling regret that they didn't take Sanders at this point?
Well, I don't know that they're going to admit to it. Look, what I was told in the immediate aftermath of the draft, because I didn't want to get into the whole pre-draft spreading of rumors about, because you never know when the rumors are being spread by someone who secretly wants to see a player drop so they can draft him, because that's one of the very real dynamics of the pre-draft process. Afterward, let's figure out how this happened. And one person that I know and trust and who was in position to draft Shadur Sanders said, he approached the process not as if he was being interviewed, but as if he was being recruited. Now, some guys are good enough to do that. Some guys aren't. And at the quarterback position where you're taking on extra responsibilities and you show up early and you stay late and you study film, the attitude of, basically, I don't have to kiss your butt, you have to kiss mine. And I'm not saying that was the attitude. I'm just trying to come up with another way to put it. That isn't going to fly because you have to be able to supremely trust the quarterback to be the guy who comes in and works as the manager out among the other employees, the leader of the team. And teams weren't willing to roll the dice. And I ultimately think the Browns made the pick when they did because they could know, it's analytics. The gap between him and the next available guy is so huge, we'd be foolish not to accept this asset. Buy low, sell high. And hell, that's a possibility too. I mean, he could be traded in the offseason. I think their ambivalence toward him has been fueled in part by the coverage that he brings. It's almost like a Tebow mania light. It's one of the reasons why Tim Tebow couldn't find a home in the NFL after Tebow mania took the league by storm. Teams don't want those extra voices and forces and factors unrelated to talent and ability influencing decisions as to who should play and who shouldn't play. And I think that's been, even though Shadur Sanders didn't really create that deliberately, that's part of the thing that makes him potentially unattractive.
Mike, your gut tells you the Browns are looking for a new head coach, a new general manager, neither or both.
I don't have a strong gut feeling that they're going to make changes. I don't have a strong gut feeling in that regard. Now, Paul DePodesta leaving, was it because his contract's coming up and he jumped before he could get pushed? I don't know. Was he truly ready to leave? I don't know. The problem is with so many situations like this, nobody ever tells the truth. Nobody ever comes out and says what's really going on, right? And we'll see. I would probably be surprised because what's different about this year? What is intolerable now that the Browns haven't been doing? They've had a couple of accidental playoff appearances, and that was enough to get Kevin Stefanski two Coach of the Year trophies. What's so different about this year that justifies making, big changes? They went all in with Deshaun Watson. It blew up in their faces. It robbed them of three first-round picks plus guys who could be key parts of the team right now. We're living with the aftermath of that disastrous trade. Why did we expect this year to be any different? I guess that's the way I look at it. So why should Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski be fired if we're still living in the jet wash of that horrendous Deshaun Watson trade?
Mike, as always, happy holidays to you. Thank you again, Father of Mine, Big Shield, Quarterback and Future Playmakers. Those are all available where you can get your books and go check those out as a gift. But special gift on Thursday on our way home is an ebook free, right?
Free.
Free charge. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. There you go. Mike Florio.
Joe Vardon joins us right now from The Athletic on the Fan Hotline. Joe, good morning.
I was watching you guys on the streaming site this morning, and Ken, you're wearing a very nice shirt today.
Well, this is an old one, actually. This is an old flannel, and now I'm wearing a jacket because the AC was on in here, and I was freezing. I was freezing my baguettes off. Joe, let's stop beating around the bush. Stop trying to change the subject.
A small talk to get out of talking about the horrors that we have to talk about.
Is Kenny Atkinson on the hot seat? Yes or no?
I think the short answer is yes, but you have to remember that the hiring was a little off in terms of how that process went, and so I can't speak to who gets to make these kinds of decisions, but we have to remember that the front office largely had presented James Borrego as choice one, and Dan basically pushed the decision towards Kenny. So, that's why I hesitate there. I think that not everybody's on the same page right now, and losing has a lot to do with that. It hasn't been a good couple months, and at the same time, certainly Kenny, but I think the organization at large had expected the early part of the season to be nothing like last year. But then at the same time, you're 29 games in and you're one game over 500. That's not good. Not probably what they expected either. So, there's a lot of injuries for sure. They're playing players who are, either too young collectively. And then, in a couple of these guys' case last year, they were barely in the league, and now they're getting major minutes. Like that's a challenge. So there's a lot of reasons for all of this, but considering how expensive the roster is, and what it looks like right now, I think there are some hard questions.
Yeah, Joe, the injuries, we saw around the NBA, and Tom Haberstroh put out that piece about all the injuries around the NBA. So I fail to see that as a excuse here, or even a justification, because they've had enough talent to win these games. I mean, San Antonio went 9-3 without Wemby. Okay, Golden State came into Cleveland and beat us with a lacrosse star without Draymond Green, without Steph Curry, without Jimmy Butler. Like, nobody can convince me we don't have enough talent on a lot of given nights on the floor.
Well, so this is something I've been thinking about, to sort of how they got here. And I had made the contention that almost no one on the roster improved from year over year. And I've been floating this, to some people in the organization, and I don't know if pushback is the right word, but more of like a little bit of a clarification as to how they view it. And, they like Donovan is actually playing better, statistically, or like however you want to measure that. Obviously Tyson improved, and Sam Merrill had really improved, but that's based on a much smaller sample size. And then you look at Darius worse, Jarrett worse, Wade worse, Mobley slightly worse. And then I think there's a caveat there too, and then Lonzo, he's been a minus offensively, and it's also been a tough pairing to have him on the team at the same time that you have Darius, given Darius's injury issues. Hunter, substantial drop. I should have mentioned that. Obviously, Tomlin has improved, but when you start to listen to all this and then you realize, the major minutes that Tyson and Tomlin are getting at a time when some of the veterans that you really count on
aren't playing nearly as well as they did. And then also, you know, that Strus has been out the whole time, and now Mobley's out a month. And before that, it was other guys who were out, and so on and so forth. So, like, no, Anthony, it's not just the injuries. But then when you look at what else is going on and then you apply the injury thing to it, it is kind of hard to determine exactly what this team is if they ever get healthy.
Joe Varden joining us on the show. So, like, if things aren't going well, like, is there a – how much blame is, like, a Donovan then? I mean, he's the best player. Is there anything there?
So, I go back to and I know fans love this. When this was a few weeks ago, when Tyson said the thing about the effort not being there. And I think the intimation was he was talking about some of the older players, but like, who could he mean? I don't think that he could possibly have meant Donovan. I think Donovan has played, as well and as hard, for this team as he has. You know, so then who did he mean? Was he talking about Jarrett? Was he talking about Evan? Was he talking about DeAndre? Like who are we talking about here? So I don't blame Donovan, of course, not at all. And I wrote, you know, before this all turned south, I wrote that it would be interesting to watch this team fully commit to him as a scorer and see if he can win the scoring title and see what that means for the offense come the postseason. But if you like I guess the biggest thing that we all have to consider is what this team has been able to accomplish, regardless of who the coach is, in the playoffs. Recognize that they've been together for a while, and they've had some opportunities, and then think about the cost. I mean, they are the only second apron team currently in the NBA, which means they have the most expensive roster with the, you know, the most restrictions on how to change it. And at what point does ownership decide that the cost of this roster is not worth what they're getting from it? So, you know, I don't think you make that call in December. We're still not even to Christmas yet. Max Strus hasn't played a game. Mobley is out of months. You know, the Pacers at this time last year were not very good, and they ended up being, you know, they were awesome, obviously, all the way until Game 7 of the NBA Finals. So, you know, it actually still isn't time to press panic buttons, but, you know, those are the major, you know, those are the major, those are the major themes right now. And then when you talk about at the beginning, like, well, is Kenny on the hot seat? And my short answer was yes, but that's just because, like, of all of these factors, right? Like, they're not winning. They haven't gotten where the organization felt they should playoff wise. This roster is crazy expensive. And, you know, are you going to decide as an organization that this roster isn't going to get it done? Or if you still think it can, well, then why isn't it? So, there's a lot going on right now, for sure.
Well, Joe Varden with us. The reason this even comes up at all is because you just outlined there's not much in the way of flexibility that you can alter things to change it for the better this year. And you're seeing effort as an issue almost on a nightly basis. So because of that, and Dan Gilbert's your owner, and he seems to be a lot more active than he was there for a few years, given his situation. So all of that would lend itself to believe that, you know, in that league where coach of the years get fired in the same year they win coach of the year, this happened twice over the last 15 years, 20 years, with George Karl 1 year, and I think it was Dwayne Casey another year. Like, guys get fired the year they win coach of the year. It's not crazy to believe a guy could get fired the very next year. That's happened, you know, a handful of times as well.
No. It's certainly not. And I mean, of course, as far as team sports go, NBA coaches are in the most, well, I couldn't even tell you the word. They're in like the strangest position of you know, the responsibility is theirs, but also like they're probably the least, they have the least amount of power of anybody in their position in other sports. And, you know, if you have an expensive roster that you believe in, especially given that these players are all not, none of them are too old. So if you are of the mind that the roster is not the issue, and yet you see that the players aren't playing as hard as they used to, then you make the decision that they've just simply tuned out the coaching staff. And I'm not saying that is what has happened here, but that's how a coach of the year gets into trouble, is when the effort doesn't look like it's there. Those would be things that Dan would be considering and consulting with Kobe on if that's what they're doing. You know, I would also, organizationally, this is a team fundamentally that does believe in its roster and also does allow for injuries to impact outcomes. So it is entirely possible that Dan is looking at all this and thinking like, well, wait a minute. Darius is not the same Darius because of this toe thing. He needs time. The Evan injury, you know, that's going to set us back a minute. He needs time. We haven't even seen Strus yet. That needs time. So I think because of how much money they spent on this roster, that actually probably tells you how they're feeling in the moment, that they're okay, and they'll be better when they get the rotation that they want and, you know, some of these guys snap out of shooting slumps. That's what I suspect. But getting beat the way they've been getting beaten lately, and even the games that they win where they're way down against these bad teams, that's not good. That's not a good look. And it raises the questions against everything that I've just said.
Well, because I was going to ask, like, you know, we say core four all the time. It's like, well, then people want to make moves. Well, I thought they had problems being able to move Darius Garland before he had a chronic injury. And with this, now with the second apron, it's like, okay, people can tweet it all they want. It don't mean it's going to happen. And like the Jared Allen thing I brought up with Lima earlier today, I said he's definitely, in talking to people, yeah, he's outperformed his contract. So what are you going to get back? So I think that the only time you probably make a move with the big name players is maybe when you're thinking about blowing it up. And this year, you're not going to do that, right?
Yeah, and I also think for our friends and neighbors out there, like we need to remind that if you're a second apron team, it's because you fundamentally believe that those specific players were going to get you where you need to go. And if you're a second apron team that decides this isn't going to work, the moves that you make to get out of the second apron mean that you're bringing back less talent in the near term. So if you want to blow this up now, like if you want Darius out, or if you want Jarrett out, or if whatever, if you think you're going to move on from one of the other two core guys instead, the return that you get on that trade is not going to be A, what you paid, and B, like the all-star caliber that of player. Because you're trying to move on from the expensive players to recreate flexibility and maybe build back around the player or two that you keep. So just keep that in mind, that like you're not trading one of these four guys to get better now. Like you really can't. That deal's not out there and the rules restricted so much. So, you know, when you start going down that road, it's to take a step backward for future flexibility.
The great Joe Varden, at Joe Varden on Twitter, from The Athletic. Joe, have a wonderful day. Thank you very much for the time.
All right, guys. Good to talk to you.
Joe Varden on the Fan Hotline.
Mr. Sam Amico joins us on the Fan Hotline. Hello, Sam from HoopsWire.com.
Sam, how are you?
Hi, gentlemen. It's been a while since we've talked. I feel like Philip Rivers coming off the bench, or coming off the couch, I guess.
You've been retired for 4 years, and you have 10 kids?
I was going to say, you're a grandfather?
Nice.
Well, I'm getting all the way close to all that stuff, I guess.
So Dan and I were just kicking around NBA expansion and all that a little bit before we get into the Cavs. Seattle, Vegas appear to be the teams that are sitting there waiting to get the NBA team that Adam Silver has said we're going to announce in 2026. Any other place that you think would be a better fit than Seattle or Vegas? Because I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. I think that, you know, Seattle to me is the obvious pick. That's been almost 20 years now since the Sonics left. And, you know, I felt the same way when they left, when the Browns left. I'm like, that's like a franchise where the fans are, you know, so passionate and really seemed ingrained in the city there. So I think Seattle's the obvious choice. You know, Las Vegas, I guess, you know, used to be a non-sports town in terms of having teams, and now the NBA is the only league that doesn't have a team there. So, and they're doing summer league there. They do their NBA Cup there. So, to me, that makes sense, and it sounds like the commissioner just coming out saying those are the two places that, you know, lead the pack.
Sam, do you believe that the league is in a place talent wise to support two new teams?
No, you know, I think that I think that there's, don't get me wrong, there's tons of talent, but to me, when I look at the end of the benches, sometimes I just think that they really need, you know, two more teams. I don't know. To answer your question, Dan, I would say no. I don't think that they really need. I don't think, you know, when you look at franchises, and more than talent to me is when you look at franchises like Charlotte or Memphis and some of these other teams that don't really draw well, although Charlotte's attendance is up this year, I just don't see the need for two more. And I don't know, you know, this has to go through the team owners, and I don't know that they're going to want to share more revenue. So, I don't think it's a given. That said, would love to see the Sonics and Seattle have a team again.
And as if the NBA needs more partying, a team in Vegas just fits, right?
Yeah, you can't go wrong in Vegas as far as you know, the league is concerned, and clearly all these other teams have either moved there, or the hockey teams, an expansion team. So, seems to make sense.
So the Cavaliers are sitting here at 15-13. They're the only team in the second apron. They're putting up the second most threes per game in the NBA and have the 28th shooting percentage on threes in the NBA. A lot of things not adding up right now, Sam. Well, how does it strike you?
Yeah, that's, to me, the, you know, we've been saying it during this past month or so, with 7 of the last 10 that they've lost. It's just, to me, they look, I don't even know that the shooting's a problem, but I don't even know if it's their biggest issue. But they're clearly settling and taking threes way too early in the shot clock, and I'm not sure why that is. Whether that's a player thing or a coaching thing, and if they think it's okay and they're going to start making them, I don't know. But you know, to me, they're not locked in. The intangibles element of it is really hurting them. You know, just the little things, the boxing out, the loose balls, the other team getting offensive rebounds. The turnovers, those are all lack of focus things. And I don't know, you know, it's hard to tell why that is. But, and the defense, I mean, the defense has been very, very soft. And, you know, everybody knows the Bulls like to turn your misses into a track meet. And that's what they did last night. The Cavs just kind of let them. So, you know, I don't know exactly. It's not just one thing when you're supposed to be a contender and don't look anything close to that. I think it's multiple things that are stacking up. But certainly, like you said, Jeff, the shooting is very questionable, the shot selection.
Sam Amico joining us. You can read him at hoopswire.com. Not to mention, Sam, it feels like we're going back to the old clock toilet offense every so often, where four guys stand around, Donovan Mitchell dribbles, or he dribbles into a three, and then in the fourth quarter, it's like, okay, Donovan, save us. We're just going to kind of hang back and hope for ourselves. And it feels like a lot of effort is being exerted by Donovan Mitchell to win games in December. And I wonder what that looks like when you hit late April.
Yeah, you're right. It's not sustainable. As great as he is, he's the one guy you never have to question, you know, not just effort, but productivity. And that's not something that's going to lead to great success. And I would think they would know that. But, you know, you look at last year when they were starting 15-0 and going all those 12-game winning streaks, it was five guys operating almost as a fist, and now it's almost going way back like Michael and the Jordan Ayers. It's just not been very cohesive. I'm sure injuries play a role. And, guys, I wonder, just from going in the locker room, to me it seems like they miss a George Niang or a Tristan Thompson because they don't have anybody. And let me tell you, I love the guys in that locker room. I've never enjoyed last year covering a team as much as I did. But they don't have that player in the locker room anymore who's going to call out guys. George Niang used to do that all the time. He'd call out Donovan Mitchell. And, you know, hey, Donovan, you're shooting too much. And Donovan would be like, oh, okay, you're right. You know, so they're missing that voice. None of the guys in the locker room today have that voice. That's not Donovan's nature. He's more of a build-you-up guy. And I just think you need to hear that stuff from somebody other than a coach. And right now, they just don't have that player in the locker room who's going to tell his teammates, hey, pull it together, because they're all nice guys and they're all soft, but not super soft spoken, but they're all not the type of guys to call you out. So I wonder if they're missing that a little bit.
That's interesting.
Sam Amico from HoopsWire.com joining us. HoopsWire.com. You can read all of Sam's coverage of the Cavaliers and the NBA, and you need it, it's there at hoopswire.com. We haven't heard the words core four a whole lot this year. Is that because it's not the core four anymore, or just because we're not hearing it anymore?
I think it's probably because, you know, it's hard to include all four guys in that right now. Well, you know, I mean, it, as we just said, it's been kind of the Donovan Mitchell show, and Jared Allen's been in and out of the lineup, obviously, with injury. Darius Garland, same thing. Evan Mobley now out. Even when the rare occasion they had all of them together, it still wasn't cohesive. And I think that's probably a bigger reason behind it than the fact that people got tired of it. I think it's just, well, it seems like we have the core one, and occasionally one other guy, and sometimes that other guy is Jalen Tyson. So just early in the season, there's not been necessarily a four-headed monster, so to speak.
Sam, does your gut tell you that Kobe Altman sits tight, is patient, lets this group get healthy and take another run at it? Or does your gut tell you there's some kind of tweak that's not just minor on the way this year?
My gut right now is telling me that he's going to, you know, wait to see if this corrects itself. Because here's the good news. There's 50-plus games left, right? And all it's going to take is a winning 6 out of 7. And you're feeling good about yourself, and you're a game or two out of first place in the East. You know, it's not like anybody's really running away with it. Yes, Detroit, I think, is, what, 21-5. So you just need a winning streak to feel good about yourself. And you don't have to do it until March. You know? I mean, you can continue to play slightly above 500 basketball, put together an 8 out of 10 winning streak or, you know, stretch in March, and you're right there. And that's ideally what you want to do. You don't want to go 15-0 and then fade after the All-Star break. So I think that there's, you know,
that said, there's not going to be much more patience with this, what we're seeing now. But I my gut says, I know if I'm the GM, I'm like, yeah, it's bad. It's not been great lately. And let's just ride it out a little bit more and see where we go and not be fanatical. And if we feel like we have to make a move, we have until February 5th. So I do think these next 4 weeks will tell us a lot about what direction they'll go. Now, obviously, we know they're somewhat limited because of the salary cap rules.
Do you think that kind of a move would involve the coaching staff, or do you think that kind of a move would involve the roster, or both?
Roster. I find it really hard to believe they would make a move with a reigning NBA coach of the year at this point. I think from everything I've heard or know, I don't think anybody views it as a big Kenny Atkinson issue right now. At least not in the Cavs front office. And to me, it's like they would have to get bounced. This would have to continue throughout the season for them to get bounced in the first round for them to consider a coaching change. They would have to be pretty bad. The roster, to me, is what they're looking at, saying, you know what, we're seeing the same issues now that we saw with the previous coaching regime. So that's probably not just coaching. It's probably a roster issue. So, again, I can tell you they're not panicked by any stretch. It's we're not playing well. If we're not going to play well, this would be the stretch of the season where you want to not play well. And, you know, we have 5-6 weeks to get it corrected if we have to make a roster change. But right now, they're just looking at it like, we just got to play better. We got to sharpen it. We don't need to panic. We need to sharpen things up. And I think that's probably the smart call when you consider the Indiana Pacers started 11-15 last season and made it all the way to Game 7 of the finals. You can't read too much into what's going on right now.
And there's a reality check, everybody. Sam, thank you very much. Hoopswire.com. Hoopswire.com. You can read all of Sam's work. Thanks, bud.
You're the man, Sam. Thanks.
All right, guys. Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Talk soon.
Back on Afternoon Drive, we've got Nick Shook, Cleveland's own, coming up in 1 hour's time. NFL Network, NFL.com. We'll get his thoughts on the state of the Browns, Bills. We'll get his take on the Mahomes injury, Joe Burrow, Joe Burrow, and so much more. Our next guest, if he wants to go see a Bears game, might have to go to Northern Indiana in the near future. But he is
it's not that far.
It feels like a drive. It feels like a real drive. And it's Indiana. Has anybody thought about the fact it's Indiana?
You got to go past the Skyway toll. That'd be incredibly annoying. I don't know, not all parts though. You can get to some really like Hammond areas right near where the casino was really quick.
I think you got to really just put it in Gary, Indiana, and just
Gary slop.
No, exactly.
Absolute slop.
Yeah. It was the murder capital of America for a minute.
Isn't Darius Garland from Gary?
But he was great.
He was great. He's always been great. Like him a lot.
I would say the best thing Gary, Indiana's done, he probably loves it too. So we're moving on. That's called a segue, folks.
That's okay. We can insult people in Gary, Indiana. They'll live.
They might not.
Isn't that the point
murder
of Gary?
Murder capital of the world.
Isn't that the point of Gary?
Pete Futek, college football news on the fan hotline right now. Pete, are you ready to go watch the Gary, Indiana Bears not win the Super Bowl 5 years from now?
How familiar are you with the greater Chicago area and the downtown portion of where Soldier Field is?
How embarrassing for you. I'm from Chicago.
Okay, so you know that from where I am in the North Shore of Chicago, to get to Gary, Indiana is probably easier than the hardest stadium in America to get to easily, which is Soldier Field. It is, that thing is nice. It's on the lake. It's beautiful. But man, is that impossible to get to with any sort of ease.
I also thought I drove in Chicago after the White Sox game let out, and it's not like the good White Sox. It was like 5,000 people went to the game. It bottlenecked that part of the highway. It's like, what are we doing here,
it's
Chicago?
It's Lakeshore Drive. Like, it's always bottled up. Pete, I'm from Beverly on the south side, so like, it is what it is.
You're familiar. Yeah, so there's no easy, and especially nowadays, you can't get an Uber in and out of there. You can't, I mean, I figured it out. I know a parking garage, we just walk a mile and get there if we have to, there's a concert or something. But like, yeah, plus, you know, I don't do NFL games. The NFL Red Zone's so awesome. Why would anybody actually go, like, sit in the stands with people and watch a game when you can just watch everything all at once right there for you?
Pete, it's community, awesome. For God's sake, you hermit.
I'm with you, Pete, though. I don't like to go to the games either. It's Red Zone. It's all there.
Especially if I care. And if I care about a game or my fantasy team, I don't want to be around anybody. Like, I don't want to, like, I just want to be by my, I don't want to comment. I don't want to hear anything. If I actually care about the outcome, which I don't care about the Bears, but, like, then I don't really want to be around people. But I get it. You know, it'd be fun. But I work for a living. Sundays are big days for me in the college world to do follow-up stuff and stuff.
Degradation of society proved by you and Peterlin right now.
Oh, absolutely. I am not a man of the people in any way. I freely admit that.
Pete, is Fernando Mendoza truly the best player in college football?
No, but I voted for him. But you know what? This is the worst Heisman race ever. It's just, there's nobody. There's no one Heisman worthy. It's fine until he made the throw against Penn State, which actually it turned out it didn't matter. He did make the one late throw to keep the ball away from Ohio State. But look, my Heisman ballot was still wide open as of, you know, 9:30 Central time on, you know, Saturday night a couple weeks ago. Like, Saiyan had come down and pulled it off and he was the most valuable player and best player on best team. Yeah, I probably would have put him on my ballot, but like, Mendoza did it. They're the number one team. He's Fernando Torreta. Okay, fine. He got it. But like, you know, he's the 46th best passer in the country. His numbers aren't that comparable to anybody who's ever great. You know, he just was kind of the guy on the team, but there was absolutely nobody else to vote for this year.
Okay, so where are the scouting people? Where are they getting it wrong with him? As he's not just projected to be the number one overall pick. In the past 48 hours, people like Todd McShay have now proclaimed him to walk on water.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because he gives good speech and he's a nice guy and he seems like he's good. Yeah, he's a good pro player. I'm going to still hold to my guns. It says Caleb Downs is actually the best football player in college football. But, you know, we'll see it this weekend. You know, some of these guys on Miami are pretty good. The pass rushers on Texas Tech are pretty good. There's a whole lot of talent out there. That was kind of my problem with Saiyan is like, is he even the best player on the offense? No. Is he the best player in Ohio State? Maybe not even the top 5 or 10, you know. So, you know, Mendoza's great. You know, Mendoza's a very, very, very good pro prospect. But this is a huge year for quarterbacks to come out. And there's a lot of good ones who are on the way. And, you know, where are the teams that are going to want one? You know, if Shadur is all right, you know, is Cleveland going to be active in that market? No, not really. You know, so who's really desperate for a starting quarterback going forward other than maybe the Jets, you know? So this will be interesting to see how this plays out.
Pete, we await the results of round one of the college football playoffs.
I can tell you two of them right out of the gate. But yeah.
I knew you were going to do this. All right, so what happens if both Tulane and James Madison win in the next week?
Oh, it'd be awesome. Well, first of all, speaking of community, me and maybe a couple friends and family of the players are going to be the only human beings watching these because they happen to be at the state cross programs at the same time as Eagles, Commanders, and Bears, Packers. So I don't know who else is going to actually willingly choose to watch Tulane, Ole Miss, and James Madison versus Oregon. But okay, I'll have it a multi view, but I'll at least have it on. Unlike pretty much the rest of America. I for all the people out there says, oh, it's an ESPN conspiracy. Oh, they want, I know it's on TNT and stuff, but like, there's no way if there was a conspiracy that we're getting these two games and not like a Notre Dame slipped in there or something like that. So it would be great. It would be fun. It's not the NCAA tournament. You can't just get hot from three and, you know, pull off a win over a Duke or an Arizona or somebody like that. But I think Tulane might make it interesting. I don't think James Madison does anything against Oregon.
Okay, so as you read on it, because when I first looked at the schedule, I thought, why is Miami and Texas A&M the best game of the day? Why is that one going at noon? Is it just them avoiding the NFL? That's the obvious read there?
Oh, gosh, yeah. And Wake and Bowl. You know, you wake up on the West Coast and, you know, turn it on and there you go. You've got the best game. And that's why Oklahoma-Alabama is Friday night. Because, again, you put those games in on prime time. I mean, I don't know. If you put those games in on prime time against, you know, against Washington Eagles, yeah, it'd probably get something. Bears-Packers might be a little tougher, especially for, you know, the parts of America that care about fantasy football and this is your playoffs. But that's, you don't want to get slaughtered by that. It's just an embarrassment. And people will watch tomorrow night because that's actually kind of interesting. And, you know, if you get up early, yeah, it's a pretty good game on Saturday morning between those two. But I just think those other two you're just throwing on there just to get them out of the way and let's move on. Because the positive about this is if things go chalk, the second round is going to be fantastic. The quarterfinals of the college football playoff, that's going to be really strong as opposed to last year where you got the kids' table games with, all right, someone gets Boise State, okay, that's fun, super, and someone gets Arizona State, okay.
Pete, you think Ohio State's going to – are they your favorite to win the national championship?
Yeah, I mean, I still don't quite buy into anything with the SEC. I'm really curious to see how Texas A&M plays against Miami. Miami's got more talent. Miami should win this, but it's at Texas A&M. I don't buy into Alabama even a little bit. Oklahoma has no offense. Georgia has no offense. The only reason why everyone's in love with Georgia is because they played against other SEC teams. And I want to see what Ohio State does once it puts that thing in the fourth gear like they did last year. And just we talked about this, but I just kind of feel like last week it's like, okay, they beat Michigan. Yeah, they want to win the Big Ten championship, of course, but that it was almost like they didn't want to show Indiana everything in the playbook before they really had to play them when it mattered. It was just at some point they're going to turn this up a few notches, at least I'm assuming so, and I think we're going to get the real Ohio State in a couple weeks from now. I think they go to the Rose Bowl and they show up strong, or not the Rose Bowl, I'm sorry, they go to the Bowl and they show up strong in that second round.
Alabama, Oklahoma. You mentioned that game on Friday night. It seems like, I mean, it's an interesting one. Ty Simpson, his stock has kind of fallen off, though, Pete.
Yeah, the kick rise up fast again. I mean, yeah, two good games in this tournament. All of a sudden, Ty Simpson goes up big. Let's see what he does in this offense. You know, it's about time it shows up. But Alabama hasn't been good for over a month. I mean, they whacked Tennessee, who, as it turns out, wasn't all that great. And what have they done since? Struggled against LSU. Okay, great. They blew out Eastern Illinois. Who cares? Struggled against Auburn. I know it's a rivalry game, but come on. Auburn's not that great. And then didn't do anything against Georgia except in the eyes of the College Football Playoff Committee. So they have not been good. Remember, they should have lost to South Carolina there, but for a miracle. So if they show up and beat Oklahoma, that they're about to be in for a beatdown in the next round. I think Oklahoma wins this. I think that defense is going to show up, and I think we're going to see a different John Mateer. He has not been right over the second half of the season since he came back from injury in that Texas game. I think time off and not having to play in the SEC championship is going to help. I think Oklahoma pulls this off against Alabama, and then we see a pretty dangerous Oklahoma defense going forward.
All right, Pete, what does Michigan do at head coach?
I'm shocked. I bought into the Jed Fish thing. I thought that it would be the perfect idea, perfect timing. That is the next job up for a guy like him. They did end their bowl game fast. So, you know, they were the first one out. So if they were going to do it with Jed Fish, it would be right away. I guess if they go the Tommy Reese route, all right. Who knows? You never know until you get a guy into one of these situations. I don't think they go Minter. I think they go a complete left turn from anything with a Harbaugh era, and they just say we're just going to start this thing over. But yeah, this thing is ugly. I mean, it's Michigan. You can pretty much get any guy you want. It's one of those jobs where I've always made the joke over the years. Every fan base thinks they can get any coach they want because, you know, who doesn't want to coach at my school? And my joke has always been like a place like say, oh, well, we're going to get a Harbaugh or any Harbaugh or a Tomlin. Well, yeah, this place could actually do it. They could actually get a John Harbaugh or a Mike Tomlin. They're not going to do it, but they could. So no name is too crazy. I think they go relatively safe, kind of boring. Like I said, maybe a Tommy Reese, or I don't know who that next coach is who's actually coaching right now, who they'd be waiting on.
All right, Pete. I'd like to be a Heisman voter. Can you help? Can you help me get a vote?
Sure. You want one? It depends on if you're in the area. I can get you. I can actually help you if you're in the greater Illinois area, because I do know the Illinois guy who runs this, but not exactly sure for Ohio. So what would you do? What would you have done with your Ohio? So you vote. What would you have done with your Heisman vote this year?
There's a UConn quarterback Nick is really high on right now.
You ever heard of a little something called Joe Fagnano?
He's not playing in this bowl. Actually, you want to see the ugliest bowl out there? Watch and see whatever the heck is coming out of that tunnel for UConn, and what is it, the Fenway Bowl against Army? Because Army's all full. Army gets everyone playing in that game, and UConn, I do believe, is down to, I want to say, its fourth string quarterback. I mean, everybody left, along with Jim Mora Jr. for that thing.
By the way, Fernando Mendoza, I'm going to be a company man this one time.
There's nobody else.
So wait, all we have to do is go back. I have to go back to Illinois. Nick has to move to Illinois to begin with, and then we're Heisman voters. That's what you're saying.
I think he's got to hook us up with the Ohio people.
Well, we know who the Ohio person is. We've already declared that's not happening.
Well, yeah, okay, but maybe
they don't like you.
It's not that they don't like me. I'm fine with me.
I don't know what I ever did. I think I existed. I think it was just not
a thing with Nick. Yeah,
yeah.
If you knew the people, what they did though this year, and they did do it the right way, is they finally postponed. You couldn't start voting until like Friday afternoon. Used to be like a week in advance they would send out the ballots, and cause they just want everyone, all the 1,800 voters or whatever it is, to at least get their ballots in. And that's why you saw these really weird, odd thing, ballots sometimes, where I think, Trevor Lawrence was awful one time and he finished second. And this year, that's why there's no chance for Jeremiah Love to do this, because he wasn't going to play. And it really was going to come down to Friday or Saturday night in those games. And that's why if Sam went lights out, he'd have won, I think. I think if he was just ripped it up and Ohio State won with ease and he was awesome, I think he is the Heisman. I was waiting for Jeremiah Smith to go off and see, okay, if he – did like Devontae Smith did against Florida in the SEC championship when Devontae won, then yeah, he might have been on the ballot. So this year was a little bit different.
All right, pull the strings, Pete. We appreciate
also a really nice subtle way, Pete. A really nice subtle way of telling us that Fanano is not even playing in the Fenway Bowl.
Yeah,
we didn't.
I knew that.
Did you know that?
Yeah, neither he nor Skylar Bell.
Yeah,
I guess we're up on this.
Yeah, again.
In case you care about, Army's only 4.5-point favorite for those of you people who care about that sort of thing. But yes, I digress.
Fagnano! Pete, we appreciate you, buddy.
Later, guys.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With Masterclass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With Masterclass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch Masterclass. And 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from Masterclass to their lives. Masterclass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. Masterclass.com/audio.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day.
We saw up to a 10x return on our TikTok shop ads. A few years ago, I started sharing my love for fashion on social media, and Willow Boutique was born. We're not just a place to shop. We've really become a community. TikTok allows us to find more people to have that great experience. I cannot imagine my business without TikTok. It's completely changed my life, and I could not be happier.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
This holiday season, choose gifts that feel thoughtful and practical with Omaha Steaks. Whether you're hosting or gifting, they deliver the world's best steak experience, and it makes you look like you planned way ahead. They've got USDA-certified tender steaks, juicy burgers, comfort meals, and tons more. Gifting Omaha Steaks is honestly one of the easiest wins. Everything arrives beautifully packaged, super convenient, and the quality is unbelievable. Their filet mignons are some of the most tender I've ever had. And the variety means you can personalize every gift. Plus, orders placed by 6 p.m. Eastern ship same day. And everything is backed by their 100% guarantee. It's holiday gifting made simple. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code T-Bone at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, code T-Bone.